seven, eight, nine, ten.
Okay. First, I was curious about the reaction to the appeal for human rights, the statement, the reaction from the white community to that.
There were two separate reactions. Governor... Excuse me, Governor Vandenberg said this sounds as if it had been written in Moscow, if not in Peking. And Mayor Hartsfield said this hadn't been written in Moscow, Peking. This is the legitimate aspirations of our own college students. So you had these extreme reactions. Vandenberg, I think, was playing to the state audience, and Hartsfield to the local audience.
Was there any effort to acknowledge or act on the grievances?
No. Not by anyone.
Not by Hartsfield?
No. Oh, no. No one. If there was, I didn't know it.
Even though he owed his, it was a good part of his life,
yeah,
to the black community.
Yeah. No. None at all.
Atlanta has often been described as a city where negotiation and compromise on racial issues worked well. I was curious whether you thought that was true or not.
I think that is true. Not all of the time, but a large percentage of the time, because the white community has been eager to negotiate, and the black community has seen that through negotiation, it can avoid, the other way around, actually, the white community has seen that through negotiation, it can avoid confrontation, which means publicity, which typically means bad publicity, and bad publicity is bad for business. Of course, any publicity is bad for business, I guess. And the black community has seen that it can use negotiation to forward its agenda probably as quickly as it could have done through some other way.
Yeah. So, in terms of the white community, looking at an image problem.
Yeah.
Sitting too busy to hate
business. Yeah.
Do you think the relationship between the white and black leadership, for example, the Atlanta Negro Voters League, affected racial change in certain ways? In other words, was it easier here than in other cities?
Oh, yeah.
Or slower?
Easier. Easier, and but who's to say whether faster or slower? But easier, certainly, because you had this history of interracial contact, which went back, I don't know how far, but went back a pretty long way. So that it was relatively easy when the 1960s came and these clashes came over lunch counters for these old mechanisms that had mediated political disputes to mediate this dispute too. They were already in place.
Right. But at the same time, it was a process not so much of confrontation, but of compromise that sort of slowed down the process of change in the city.
Sure, I'm sure it did. Well, I think on some occasions it probably speeded it up. And on others, it probably slowed it down. I don't think we'll ever know. Had we done this instead of that, would the timetable have been faster? So I guess faster in some cases and slower in others. Excuse me. Oh, that's terrible. What do you do about it?
Nothing. I have laryngitis. Drank a lot of tea.
I can't have laryngitis.
I couldn't. I can't either. I teach everyone this. The impact of the student movement on this relationship, on this black-white leadership relationship?
Well, it had a couple of impacts. One, it replaced it, not absolutely, but shifted it. It made room for this new group of people who were students and for most importantly, for a new group of adults who were more closely aligned with the students than were the old group of adults. Then it demonstrated, I think, to the more perceptive members of the white community that this black group didn't speak for everyone. That there were forces in the black community, in this instance students, and in another instance, who's to say whom, who were opposed to this sort of go slow across the tables approach. So it altered this relationship, and I'd hazard a guess that this black-white politics in Atlanta, politics in the large sense, hadn't been the same since.
Sure, it hasn't. Yeah. How about on racial change in general? The impact of the student movement that speeded up the change?
Oh,
changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's what I was talking about before in terms of whether the King Sr., the Reverend Lord, and that process was getting things done, but very slowly, and so it needed a little explosion of it.
Yeah. And the students gave them that.
Okay. Was there less violence in the at all? heard that before.
Yes, yes.
Why would you do that?
First, you had a good police force.
Okay.
Good in the sense that it would keep violence down. Secondly, you had at the time when violence was likely, you had a black community that at least gave lip service, a little more than lip service, to nonviolence. And you had a white business community which were doing all it could to ensure that violence didn't ensue. So, yeah, you did have, you know.
What was the basis for the white community that wasn't?
Again, it was fear of negative publicity.
Birmingham, Wilbur,
yeah. Which in their case meant any publicity.
Yeah, sure. In regard to negotiated settlements on the sit-ins, lunch counters, and the school desegregation, was there a lot of opposition to this?
Oh, yes. I can remember a tremendous mass meeting held at a church on the corner of Ashby and Fair Streets. And I can't remember the name of the church now. It was either Mount Moriah Baptist Church or the one across the street, in which this agreement was announced by the adults and the two students who had participated in negotiating. You notice this. The students forced the lunch counters to integrate, and then two students and about 50 adults negotiated the agreement. And the crowd was just angry. I remember women saying, "You mean to say I haven't shopped in Riches for 6 months and this is what I get?" And no. And they even called Daddy King and Uncle Tom. This is, you know, scandal. And M.L. King Jr. gave a speech on leadership, and it was a mighty speech. He lifted the audience up and he let them down. He lifted them up, he let them down. He lifted them up, he let them down. When he let them down the last time, he was through. And it was over, and all the anger and the heat had gone out of the people. And they
willing to accept that agreement?
Reluctantly willing to accept the agreement.
Students too?
Yeah, reluctantly.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Were there suggestions from the students to do it differently?
Oh, sure.
What way?
Well, as I remember this agreement, it was, we would stop all demonstrations for a period. And then at the end of this period, then selected lunch counters would integrate. And if that worked, then the rest would integrate. And our attitude was, no, we're going to keep demonstrating until they integrate, and the only way they're going to integrate is the day after we stop demonstrating. And then everybody will come, not a select group.
You didn't want to lock it into school desegregation?
No, not at all. And it's never really clear, to be honest, whether or not it was tied into school desegregation. I think the whites and some of the black adults wanted that to happen. But anyway, we didn't like the agreement.
And the agreement basically was the Borders, Calhoun, King Sr.
Yeah.
Pretty much. People like Carl Holman, I guess, weren't involved.
No. No. So. Well, Lonnie King and Herschel Sullivan were involved. That's when they almost lost their leadership. Because they had, however reluctantly, ratified this. They were the two students on the Adult Student Negotiating Committee, or whatever, Liaison Committee.
Did they have much voice?
No, I'm sure not. But they were there.
Yeah, okay.
Suspect in our eyes, anyway.
The effect of the settlement on merchant change in the city, I think it speeded it up.
So sure, I think it speeded it up.
It did. So in a sense, retrospectively,
it was fine.
Yeah.
And I think, we viewed it from the heat of our position as being on the front lines, as we thought, of racial change in America.
We
were. Yeah. But I don't think, in retrospect, I don't think it made much difference. It probably slowed us down a little bit from our next target, whatever that was.
Well, in a sense, I guess it speeded up the bus desegregation, but certainly it didn't speed up school desegregation.
Yeah.
Because that proceeded at a
snail's pace, right.
So, yeah.
And the two really had nothing to do with each other anyway.
Were the students involved at all?
No.
Okay.
It was a whole, another different set of people. Some of the adults were involved in both, like Calhoun.
Yeah. I thought Don Hollowell.
Yeah, and Hollowell would have been.
Yeah.
But it was more likely a different, whole different set of people.
Okay. You were involved in SNCC, of course. Did SNCC operate in Atlanta differently than elsewhere?
Yes. We treated Atlanta typically as an R&R place. This is a place where we came to relax and take it easy, where we didn't work, where we had our office, where we relaxed.
That sort of acknowledges that things were going well here, and they really weren't.
Well, it was not because they were going that well, although comparatively they were going well, compared to Birmingham, say they were going well,
okay.
But also suggest that we knew you couldn't work all the time. And the staff here, at least at this time, was altogether support for the people in the field. So it'd be a real luxury for me to have spent my day helping these people and then worried about something here. And it just seemed tactically the thing to do. Later we did get involved in things in Atlanta, but we really intended just for this to be an office and nothing more.
Do you think the same reason that the SCLC and everybody else located
yes.
here pretty much?
Yeah.
Because this was the best of the southern
cities? This was the best of the southern cities, had the best transportation, had the best, it was a communications hub. It was all those things.
Black colleges.
Yeah. It had everything you needed to. It had the best of everything you needed to locate an office.
Did you come into any kind of situations where King Sr. or Borders or any of the other old leaders tried to put a lid on SNCC activities here?
Probably. I don't remember any. Don't recall any. There are a couple of things we did get involved in. Have you read about the so-called Berlin Wall?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, we got involved in that, and I'm sure they tried to put a kibosh on that. I don't know that they did, but I'm sure they did. And then later on, we had this little project down in Vine City. I don't...
I'm with the feeling that the older black leadership was as concerned as the white leadership about image.
Yes, oh, surely. Oh, sure they were. Sure they were. But I don't think they saw us as any kind of serious threat, at least in this initial period. Crazy and wild, but we weren't king. If they are comparing us to Martin Luther King, that is, as black leadership, we were decidedly the lesser factor.
Because he, too, did very little of that.
Yeah.
So, was that part of an arrangement?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Probably pressure from his father, pressure from other adults, and I think the realities of the situation. You know, let's just have our office here and not do anything else. We can't afford to spend office time or to have, you know, we just can't afford this dual function here in Atlanta.
It was a more serious problem.
Yeah.
Herbert Jenkins wasn't full Congress.
Right.
In 1968, in the newspaper statement, you said something about your impact as a legislator at that time, 68, had mainly been with getting your constituents' local complaints a hearing, to put constituent complaints in the hands of those who deal with them rather than acting so much on state government issues.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this was the main impact of the early black state representatives and senators?
Except for one or two of us, maybe, with the exception, say, of Bobby Hill, who was just a brilliant lawyer and who probably had an impact on a large body of this state's law. But yeah, for most of us, yeah. Okay.
And what was the reasoning there, basically?
Well, you know, you could feel when you walked the room, at least I could, maybe I'm different, but you could feel this hostility. You know, there he is. Here he comes. It was just awful, and you had the feeling that the harder you pushed against it, the more rigid it would become, and that you would be defeating whatever purpose you had if you did, so you had to work and weasel your way on in. It was awful stuff.
I spoke to Leroy Johnson in the sense of trying to get your constituents' demands met at that time, dealing now with the late 60s, was it still difficult to get black demands to hear in the late 60s?
Well, typically what I'd do is somebody come to me with a problem and it was a state problem and some agency handled it, I'd write a letter, a fairly detailed letter to the state agency. And typically they'd say, okay, we'll take care of whatever it is. But every now and then you felt as if you were just dropping your letter into a waste paper basket. And it wasn't because of this bureaucracy. I felt that it was because it came from me. Of course, you never knew, but then, you know, a month would pass by and you write another, write another, write another. Sometimes they'd be solved, sometimes they wouldn't.
This involved city problems also? Did you have any impact on getting?
No, I didn't deal much with city problems. Whoever was the chairman of the delegation, the county delegation, would do with that.
Yeah. I was just thinking that we're in a period of Ivan Allen now, almost 7, so I would think that black demands were getting a real hearing at City Hall by this time.
No.
You don't think so?
Yes, I think they were, but they've not. Through me. They wouldn't have come through me.
Okay. The state government is still resistant to it.
Resistant? Well, reluctant would be better than resistant. Reluctant.
Reluctant to give the acknowledgement to the black community.
Yeah.
The effect on racial change of having a black mayor. Like,
Well, you can't quantify these things, but I think remarkable, particularly, although I've been told that Maynard Jackson's one of the most hated black men in this city. And may be true, I don't know. But he seemed to me to perform so well. Built this airport under budget, ahead of schedule. Even if you didn't like what he did, you had to think he knew what he was doing. Seemed to me such a competent, capable kind of guy that he it had to be at least a modest plus for race relations. Maybe not a major plus, because his personality is abrasive and he's, you know. But I think it'd have to be some kind of plus.
What do you think the white business community went after him with a hatchet in their hand?
Well, first, because he threatened their privileges, their method of dealing with City Hall, their contract system. He upset them. He touched their pocketbooks. And anybody becomes upset when you do that.
In what sense? There's the things like joint ventures?
Joint ventures, bring in new people to do new things, even new white people to do new things. You know, if you've been, this old group of whites have been used to doing this for years and years and years, and all of a sudden here comes Mr. New White Man, you know, you got to be upset. Maynard just upset the apple cart. And I don't think some of them have recovered from it since.
You think in terms of himself, who obviously won with a lot of black support, Jackson really provided much more for the black community, I imagine, than even so.
Yeah, for sure.
In other words, there had to be a black mayor at some point.
Yeah.
Really. How about the first black congressman? How about Andy Young?
Andy, well, I think Andy was a big step, a big plus, but maybe not a radical big plus, because even though a lot of business people here deal with the congressman, typically the average person doesn't, or at least beyond Social Security checks and that kind of thing. So aside from the happiness at his election, I don't think it made a great, great difference in the lives of most people.
The symbolic.
Yeah, symbolic one. Was
that the same, really, Leroy Johnson's or QB Williamson in the city council?
Yes, yes.
Basically,
yes.
Symbolic.
Yeah. The first couple of people, yeah.
How about Horace Tate way back in the Board of Education there?
A little less so, I think, because the Board of Education, the school system was always more black than the city in terms of students and probably in terms of teachers too. So he probably was a little more real than symbolic, because he's an educator too.
Right.
This is a perfect job for him.
He should have stayed here.
No? Very good. And I didn't say it. Anyway, but because he's an educator, because that's his focus in life, I think he probably was less symbolic than QB and Leroy. He automatically fit in ways that they didn't.
In ways to change anything then?
No, probably not. Well, I don't know.
I guess I'm trying to get one of the things that gives really a sense of racial change during this time. I've always gotten the feeling that while QB, Williamson, and Horace Tate and all themselves are doing fine, slow job, Atlanta really was not moving very fast, and would have, if you hadn't put the fire on something,
yeah,
but you didn't move, and it really wouldn't have moved very fast at all. We'd still be dragging along here.
Probably so. If the business community could have kept the umbrella on and kept things quiet, probably so.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't so much they were really trying to address the grievances of the black community, trying to
keep them quiet.
Great. That's
okay.
That fast, yeah.